Blog Talk Radio.
Andre, I knew you were going to be one first one here. So, Brandon, how you doing? I'm on YouTube, me on Facebook, Brandon on YouTube. Yeah, I knew Andre was going to be the first person on here with his, I don't remember the exact name, the Academy of Polygamy Science. So I knew I was expecting that. I was expecting that. I wouldn't expect anything short of that. Let me do some basic sharing here real quick. You know, guys, go ahead and share this video. I do expect a spirited conversation tonight. Not too argumentative, not too negative, but a very spirited. All right, the Andre School of Financial Literacy and Polygamy Science. So we're going to have a really good conversation tonight. About polygamy, Black community, can this, is this a part of a solution, or even the mindset of being a part of the solution? One thing, as we get ready to get started, I want to go ahead and say that in no way, shape, or form am I judging anyone who chooses to participate in polygamy or chooses not to participate in polygamy. It is to each their own. What we really want to delve into is benefits, how it could work, the type of people that should be involved in it, the dynamics of it historically, how it's been in history. We're going to talk about some those kinds of points of view. You know, with everything I try to, my goal is the positive aspects and everything. It's really about we can agree, we can disagree. I don't really care if we disagree. You know. But can we just agree to continue to build together, you know, continue to grow together? That's what I'm more interested in more than anything else, is that dynamic. It's like, I don't care if you agree with me spiritually, religiously, but if our people are suffering, why do we continue to allow it? Because we have a difference of religious beliefs. That's the thing we don't want to get past. I'm going to have those. I'm sharing this thing all over the place. A couple more shares, and then we're going to get right into it. I had some notes, but I left them at work. Hello, beautiful bean. I like that name. Hello, beautiful bean. That was on point. I like that. If you have some people you want to share this out to, you know, go ahead and share it out. I want to make sure that everybody gets a chance to have their piece, their discussion, their point of view. But like I said, more of a solution. I'm going to share this on some pages. I should share this on, but guess what? We don't care. There's nothing to care about that today. And as always, you know, the first 5 minutes, I'm always going to share. So then we get into that. Alrighty. I believe that is all the shares that we're going to do. Alright. You know, some of these comments, gotta pull out the spectacles. I broke my other one, so I had to go get some new reading glasses. Yeah. This looks, they look dirty. Alright, so we're gonna talk about polygamy tonight. We get started in this conversation. A few thought processes. Like I already said, that we're not going to be judgmental. If some people think that it's good for them, then hey, it's good for them. If it's worked out for some people, great. If it hasn't worked out for other people, you know, that's great too. They find that a one-on-one relationship is better, sure. But I can see you right now. But at the end of the day, it's about building. It's about creating a better environment. Let's look at a few preliminary things before we get involved into a few statistical things. Well, let me give you a little bit of history first. Let me give you a little history on myself. My first experience with polygamy wasn't me being involved in a polygamous relationship, although I've never been involved in a polygamous relationship. I have been involved in an open relationship. So I will discuss that a little bit later on. But when I went to Saudi Arabia, when I went to North Africa, a lot of North African countries, Morocco, when I've been to the Gambia, some of these countries, when I went to Dubai, Bahrain, Oman, Yemen, Syria, there's a difference in polygamy and the treatment of people based on culture. Like in Saudi Arabia, no dig against Saudi Arabia, but in Saudi Arabia, there is a very heavy-handed disrespect towards women in Saudi Arabia. In Dubai, in the UAE, United Arab Emirates, the women had just as much rights and privileges as the men, so they weren't dogged out. I saw polygamy functioning differently based on those two countries. You know, when I was in the Gambia, it's because it's really chieftain-oriented. I saw a different type of polygamy than I saw in Morocco. So depending upon your culture that you're looking at, you're going to get a different viewpoint of polygamy. Even in America, when you look at the way it's done with the Mormon sects that practice polygamy, the Hebrew Israelites that practice polygamy, their mindset towards women and towards the family is different. So you can't put all the experience of what it would be like, how it would roll, based on one culture that you looked at. You have to really spread your viewpoint to see how it's worked and pull from it, like the best of the best. And if this is something you're interested in, they're pulled like the best part of it. So I've witnessed it. I've coached people. There are people here in America that I've coached when I was doing personal training and life coaching. I've worked with polygamous families, and I saw their dynamics. I saw some from Nigeria, who is in polygamous families, who is here in America, and I saw the dynamic there. I saw the Americans who grew up in an American society who were in polygamous relationship, and I've seen how it works here in America. I've seen some of the craziness, the crazy ideas of it, and some of the ones that actually make sense, the ones that aren't just based on sexual gratification of a man. So, and that's the kind that we want to talk about tonight. We want to talk about that guy. That's the first thing. Yes, this is what I need to hear after 4 hours of class. All right, good. That might be sarcasm. I'm not sure. But sure. Here's the thing. Another aspect of polygamy that in watching and seeing all these people participate in polygamy, the only way this is going to work in Black America is, man, I need words, right? The only reason way it's going to work is, and period, just period, not just Black America. The man in the relationship, and understand the idea of polygamy is a man with multiple wives, right? The man in this relationship must be an alpha male. Let me establish that right off the rip. The man must be an alpha male. If the man is not an alpha male, this is not going to work. If he's a beta, Charlie, Delta male, it's not going to work. Not that there's anything wrong with those kind of guys. Some of those guys are great providers. They're loving husbands. They're great fathers. But in order for a man to have multiple wives, he has to be an alpha male. He has to be a leader. He cannot be someone who shirks his leadership duty off to a woman, or shirks his leadership duty off to another man, who shirks them off to just society and however it flows. This must be an alpha male, one who is in control of his emotions and can function in the environment with control of his emotion as to make sure he meters out his emotional responses to each woman as she is needing of it. This wife number one may not be a loving, affectionate, be around her all the time wife. He needs to know how to handle that. But then here's wife number two. She may be a very affectionate, need a lot of attention kind of wife. He needs to be able to maturely give this one, wife number two, all that she needs, and give wife number one what she needs when she needs it, and be mature enough and perceptive enough to know how to do that. You know, if you're like a little Charlie male and you're trying to satisfy everybody, you want to give to wife number one everything you give to wife number two, and all you're doing is creating frustrations and things like that. But so this has to be an alpha male. It can't be some low-level male. It has to be an alpha male. It's the only way it works. Okay. okay? Oh, shoot, I got another one thing on. My bad. I'm going to be mad, but good to go. So that's another thing about this. You can't be some low-level dude. Let's dispel a few things as well. In America, oftentimes when you talk about polygamy with Black American women, the first thing that comes to mind for them is the financial aspect of it. I need to have my own house. I can't do this, and we all in the same house. Like, you got to be able to pay for me my own house. Look, that's dating open with a sugar daddy. That's all that is. That's you being an open relationship, and he's a sugar daddy. That's all that really is. That's not polygamy. That's not group economics. That's not built group family structure. That's just, hey, Margarito. That is just dating openly with benefits, you know? And when I said earlier that I was in an open relationship, that's what that was. The women knew who each other. They knew who each other were. They knew where each other were in my life. They had their places to stay, and I had my place to stay. And the thing about it is, although none of them was wife, you know, they were girlfriend and girlfriend, we didn't all interact together. I was splitting my time over here, and I was splitting my time over there. This one, little money going into this house, money going into that house, you know, it was, and then trying to add money into my own house. So that's nowhere near like polygamy, how it has been historically, or how it should be if this is something that a person is interested in. So that's just, like I said, dating, openly dating, and being a sugar daddy. That's all that is. So there's a total difference between polygamy and polyandry. So just get that established. Just get that established in your mind. Now, historically, how has polygamy been historically in society? Well, from the oldest records that we possibly have, from the Sumerians, the Babylonians, the Greeks, the Hebrews, the Aztec Mayans, the, you know, all throughout history, the Africans, there has been a practice of polygamy at some point in most societies' history that polygamy was practiced. Sometimes it was practiced through religious ideas. Sometimes it was practiced because of patriarchal male ego ideas. And then other times it's practiced because of survival, right? It's practiced because of survival. Hey, how you doing? The survival part, here's a great example. And so let me give the women something. So for those who say that can a woman do it, let me give y'all something real quick. There's there's a Tibetan tribe. I forgot the mountain tribe. They live way up in the mountains. Over into that. And their polygamy is different. It's the woman who has multiple husbands. The reason why? The area that they live in doesn't produce enough vegetation to feed everybody with uncontrolled population growth. So about 50, 60 years ago, they incorporated where each woman would have multiple husbands to keep population growth down so that they can continue to survive off the land. Sometimes it's done because of survival. It's been done in history because war had ravished the number of men in a culture, and so they instituted. Andre says, I think the religious survival ideas of polygamy are synonymous, and they are to a certain degree. I would agree with you, but sometimes it's just pure survival. And I'm gonna get to the religious part in just a second. I'm gonna call you 72. Non-melanated people do it all the time. Us copper-colored people are now westernized and have gotten away from it. Can't promise I can stay. I gotta watch State of Union address. Oh, I didn't know that joke was on TV tonight. Interesting. But and Western culture and religion actually coincide with one another in this next aspect of it. Religiously. In most religions, as far as the text is concerned, the text actually promotes polygamy. The text does, in almost every aspect. The text promotes it. It promotes it. Sorry, YouTube and do this real quick. The text promoter.
You look at the most texts, the Bhagavad Gita, all the things, they're what the gods usually have multiple wives. The kings, the queen, the kings and the prince, the duke, all the royalties usually have multiple wives. Anyone of means usually has multiple wives in all those situations. In the Abrahamic religion, which most people are familiar with, Abraham had his wife, but he also slept with his servant. They claim Israel, Jacob, he had Leah, he had Rachel. The 12 tribes of Israel come from a polygamous relationship, right? It is just throughout that book that it has it. Now, a doctrine came about, not text-wise, not something from it, a doctrine came about that started saying that every man should have one wife. And they brought that from it, said, let every man, you know, man, another wife is not a good thing. Let every man have a wife of his own. It talks about let the deacons and the ministers just have, you know, have one wife. The only people that the Abrahamic religion and that only in the New Testament, the Testament according to Jesus and Paul, has the specification that only deacons and pastors are to have one wife. It says nothing about everybody else. But a doctrine formulated by the Catholic Church created this idea, well, polygamy is not of God, all right? So it is only through doctrine. It is not through the actual right. Otherwise, it will contradict itself. But we're not going to go there. That's not for tonight. We're not talking about religion. We're talking about the idea of polygamy. So as we continue in this thought process, let me get my thinking position. As we continue in this, thought process. Thank you. Appreciate it. As it's made, it's a great song. I love this thing. I have to keep it though. People be trying to take it from me all the time. But it can't touch it though. It's been consecrated, so you can't put your hands on it. So when we look at it historically, you know, religiously and historically, society has always, for the most part, allowed polygamy, practiced polygamy. It wasn't done by everyone. Every person couldn't afford it for one. Nor was every man equipped for it. Like I said earlier, it takes a certain kind of man to be equipped for that. Now, it also takes a certain kind of woman to participate in it. One of the other things that you hear a lot of American women will talk about is the fact that in polygamy, what women are going to get jealous and they're going to get angry and they're going to get possessive. And women, I'm sure someone is going to say on here that that's not for me because I'm greedy and I want my own. I just want to have my own man. For that mindset, no, polygamy is not for you. The idea of polygamy is not for you because polygamy is more than just your emotional stance, and it's more than just your sexual stance. If anything, it's family. If anything beyond that and above that, stands on family and economic development. Now, here in America, we're talking about not all men. I hate when they throw out that ratio. That yes, worldwide, just genetically, there's about an equal number of men to women. But when you break it down into available men, men who aren't gay, men who aren't sub-nation prison, men who are capable of the maturity and the know-how to be able to be a good husband, it breaks down to about 7 to 1. About 7 women to 1 good, mature, motivated man. 7 to 1. And since it has been a good, 50 plus years since the male population in America has been decimated, I will say that within the next 15 years, the male population in America will get decimated again. And of course, who are going to be the primary men fighting those wars? Black, Spanish, men of color will be the primary ones fighting those wars. Not primary in number, but primary in percentage will be the primary one fighting that war. African people do polygamy, however, each wife feels that their husband is committed to them above all women. What they do for one, what they do for the other, each woman feels loved by
that manner. But exactly, polygamy will reinforce the Bible that says men can own women. Don't think a strong woman would want that. I don't think that it reinforces the Bible. It is practiced very widely in Africa, especially when I went over to Christianity and are still practicing their, you know, either ancestral ways or even in Islam, or even the ones who are Islamic, that polygamy is still very, very strong based on their customs and their culture. As far as it taking it back to women becoming property of men simply because of polygamy, I think that is off base. And let me give you an example why it's all this. That would be like if we took the 13th Amendment that ended slavery in America. And it would be the exact same as somebody making a statement that if you take away the 13th Amendment, then that means that white people can own slaves, that white people can take all the black people back into slavery in America. And black people aren't going to stand for that. You're right. Black people won't stand for that. But the morality of people of today is not going to stand for that type of slavery. Is there economic slavery? Is there educational slavery going on? Sure. But to actually physical labor slavery in America in the current day and age without a cataclysmic event happening, that's not going to happen. You can take the 13th Amendment and throw it away because the Declaration of Independence, the preamble of the Constitution, even though when it was written, it was for land-owning white Anglo-Saxon males. It is now the prevailing culture that it is for every human being. So you're not going to do that. So that reinforcing the women, men owning women, that's not going to happen. There is no way in the progression of our society today that men in America will go to a position where we control women, even own women, even in that show called the Handmaid's Tale, where the men pretty much own the women and that sort of thing. That happened after a massive cataclysmic event that caused women to not be able to bear children anymore, and so these drastic measures were taken. It had to be something like that. And there was a movie that was made where no woman was able to have a baby, and the world was kind of going crazy and super security and that sort of thing. And when one woman was found pregnant, it's like everybody went crazy. So it takes something massive to happen in order for something like that to come about. Oh, I got to see. What's up? My brother, my physical brother, is on YouTube. So what's up, man? We don't need more toxic masculinity. Society is still recuperating from the 50s. But that's what I'm saying. See, that's what in the first part, I was saying that polygamy cannot be established by a man who is ran by ego. Be a true alpha male is not ran by his ego. His emotions and his ego do not control him. There's more balance between his masculine and feminine energy. So this is not for everyone. This is not for everyone. But moving into it, historically, polygamy has been a norm. But if you notice, it's been a norm for men who are of a certain level, of a certain understanding, not for the average dude. A confusion that we have in society is that when we see a man who we say is an alpha male, usually we're pointing to the savage, overly aggressive, overly masculine man, the thug, and in black community, it might be the thug dude. my real brother, shut up, baby. My real brother's on Facebook. I know he went riding motorcycle today because it was like 71 degrees down here. I got to get out and ride this week. But anyway, so we're in this situation where a lot of women are equating a thug as being an alpha male. Not the guy who goes to work and grinds all day, every day, brings home a check, takes care of his family, is with his kids, nurturing his wife, ensuring the tranquility of his home, ensuring the legacy with his children. We don't give that guy the label of an alpha male, and a lot of women who will run over that guy, the guy who's in touch with his emotions, in touch with her emotions, we'll say he's too sensitive, he's too soft, He's too loving. He's too caring. You know, he's too something. He's always too something. But then the one that treats him bad, that curses him out. I see guys all the time, they're like yelling and cussing at their woman, degrading their woman. And we say that's a real man, that's a man's man, that's an alpha. That's bull. We have this conception of what is a good man has been thrown way out of whack because of Hollywood, TV, residual ideas from slavery, all kinds of stupidity is why we still have some of these ideas. And, you know, that is not the kind of man that should participate in polygamy. That man should never participate in polygamy. Hell, I go even further. That man shouldn't procreate, you know, to be honest, because that's not the one who's going to be there for his children. He's not. He's not. The male lion who has a pride, for those who are going to say it's not natural for a male to have multiple, a male lion who has a pride, right, a pride of lionesses, is very nurturing and caring to the cub. It's very protective of the territory. You know, he may not do all the hunting, but he protects the territory. He may get to eat first because he's protecting the territory, keeping the balance proper in his environment, which is the job of the man in the polygamous relationship. Now, moving into another aspect, most people have the idea that polygamy is a masculine idea for sexuality, and that's all it really is. For anyone who is of wisdom, we'll come to an understanding that the reason why, with the deficit of good black men compared to the thug nations, what the media has personified, it is far from an idea of just sexuality, of just intimacy. Actually, intimacy wind up being like a little bit further down the list. Because the first aspect, just like Andre said, let me get back to Andre. What's his school? Andre's School of Financial Literacy and Polygamy Science. The first aspect is economic, group economics. Let's look at a case of group economics that we often see. Mexicans will come to America, find a house, y'all can't see my house, but find a house that has enough room. They'll put eight families in that room. They'll each only be paying about $100, $200 a month to pay for the mortgage of that house. They'll pay the light bills together. They'll pay everything together. They're all working in a cooperative. Now, granted, they're not in an intimate relationship with each other, but they show the working together in a cooperative in order to better themselves financially. hey, Donna, to better themselves financially. So they come into a group economic situation. Now, we know as much as we talk about that, in the black community in America, we know it's not going to happen, right? In the poor community, polygamy is a plus for the women, but if you're not poor, I don't think it's. See, that's I'm gonna break that down. If you're not poor, why it's still good if you're not poor. Actually, it's even better if you're not poor. Even better if you're not poor. But financially, we know that black people in America aren't going to group up in one house. You know, since my brother is on here, I would be willing for me, my brother, my sister to come together and like buy a house together. We'd love to do that and build. But can the other people in our lives do that? We might have a little problem because American society has conditioned us to have our own. Got to have my own thing. If all our kids were still small, can we deal with that? Grandkids and stuff coming over. Can we create an environment where everybody's getting along and everybody's working towards one goal? Now, you said that it's good for poor people. Yes, because that's a vehicle that can take poor people out of poverty. Too many times we think that a job takes us out of poverty, or we think that, you know, playing some instrument, singing some song, or running some, playing with some ball takes us out of poverty, right? But it doesn't. But what can really take us out of poverty on mama is group economics in a polygamous relationship, because we're not going to do it. Poor people in the project aren't going to say, hey, let's all get together and move into a house together and build our economics. They're not. They should. And if you can get a group of them to do it, that's great. But they're not. But for all the single mothers that are in there
in the projects with their kids, and they're trying to figure out how to make ends meet, and they're trying to figure out how to keep their government benefit. If those two or three women found a good man, and they all started working together, not the man and sugar daddy in them, but they all start working together, they can build themselves up and have something better for their children. Now, of course, most people will think that that's good, that that's a way to help poor people get out. But when you talk about rich people, middle income people, up to rich people, and say that it's not good. I want you to think about the economics now at that level. And I'm going to give you some numbers. Let's say you have a man. He has a decent enough job. The average household income in America, the median income in America is $54,000. So let's say this man makes $54,000. Let's say wife number one makes $54,000. Let's say wife number two makes $54,000. Well, now we have $162,000, one household, $162,000 with three different people who are providing income for that household. Now, let's say there is a wife number four, because remember I said in good man status, there's seven women to one man. So let's say we got wife number four. Wife number four, let's say her role position in the house is, these three are bringing in this income of $162,000. They're utilizing good financial literacy. And that person, that fourth wife, her responsibility is to start a business, right? I don't know if that's the median income or the household income. I believe it's the household income. But I think it's one or the other. But let's just say it's the average income for in America. I think it's the average income in America is $54,000. But it might be household. But let's just use the numbers that I'm using, right? Because we would say that a person who makes $54,000, they're doing pretty decent, right, in America. You're doing pretty well with that. So we got $162,000 coming into the household. We got wife number four. Her job now is to take the investment funds from that $164,000, and they use that to start a business, to buy land and buy property and build rental homes or Airbnb homes. And her responsibility is to ensure that those houses, that business is functioning, right? While everything is being funded over here, you don't need the business to take care of the household because wife number four, she's built it. Then we got wife number five. Wife number five is taking care of the house, she's taking care of groceries, she's taking care of everything that's going on. Wife number six and wife number seven, they're working together to educate the kids, teach them three, four different languages, ensure that they're getting their education. Growing them up with financial literacy. You know, when you're, if you're working it, if there's seven women to every good man, and you're working it in that format, which interestingly enough, in most lion pride, there's about five to seven lionesses per male. So when you break it down into that format and it's working that way, then yeah, this dude, this family, this structure is built for success. And you're talking about people who already are would be making good money by themselves. If you got a man and a woman both making $54,000 by themselves, those two got married, they got $108,000 coming into the house. Most people are going to say they're successful, they're doing very well. But then when you add all these other components, now they're doing great. They're doing great. Let's say you got wealthy people. Each one of them have established businesses. You got three, four wives who have established businesses, and a husband has established business. They're all bringing in a six-figure income. And now, what can you do with three people bringing in a six-figure income? And they're already running business. Now you can expand your business even bigger, faster, greater, become more of a brand than you would have if it was just you and your wife, right? So to say that it's just for poor people, you're diminishing the power of wealthier Black Americans to be able to establish a bigger, a stronger financial footprint in this world and in America, because now they go from a six-figure income to a seven-figure household. When you have to think about it bigger than just one. That's what I'm saying. It's much bigger than a small idea. What about all the kids they're gonna have? But that's what I'm saying. If it's one in seven, that's what you got. Two wives handling the kids, teaching the kids, learning. If these kids grow up learning one a guy that I used who used to be my neighbor when I lived downtown Atlanta, a guy who was one of my neighbors, he comes from a he's from the Gambia. His dad was a chief. He is him and his brother, one of his brothers, they make very good money importing and exporting. They have a couple of real estate businesses here in Atlanta. He himself has three wives, and he is of 17 children in their religious situation. He loves all his brothers and sisters. He loves all his sister moms and his mother and his father. They have a wonderful relationship. I know this is just one person, but hey, it's one person. But each one of his siblings, who are of adult age, because some of them are like 10 years old, because his dad is still popping children. Each one of his siblings, they all went to different colleges and universities in different countries. Most of them have started their own businesses and are making really, really good money, like making mid six figure income. There's a difference when you make $100,000 a year and you make $300,000-$400,000. It's totally different, right? What about with that man and the man gets bored with one of the wives? This is where your selection process has to be, you know, I mean, you're going to select it, but even in current marriage, people get bored with each other and they divorce. So would they still be divorces in polygamy? I'm sure they would be. Should there be some kind of financial contracts written up in the event of a divorce? You got doggone right. Protecting each other and yourself is vital in any marriage. Any marriage. You think... I've been exposed in a marriage before. I would never expose myself like that again. So it's vital that you protect yourself. So even in these situations, polygamy is not going to solve every issue. You know, sure, I tell you some things it does solve. Most men don't know how to emotionally connect with a woman on certain levels, but other women know how to connect with each other on certain levels. Having sister wives gives the woman another person they can go to who will understand them better than their husband can. In certain areas, you have a woman going through postpartum depression. I went through a postpartum depression with my first child. My depression was wholly different than what my wife at the time, her depression was like. I really couldn't connect with her as she was going through that depression. But other women who were, you know, married to other Marines where we were, and a couple of Army and Navy, they were able to connect with her and talk to her and help her go through it better than I could. Hell, a woman on an airplane as she was flying back to Germany, because she had brought our daughter to America while I was gone for 30 days. She brought her back to America and was here and then came back. And a lady who was on the plane with her was able to connect with her in certain emotional ways better than I could. So having sister wives can be a benefit in that. And as far as boredom, this is where that man, you have to know, you don't just grab some woman that you don't have any kind of, you can't grow and build with. And you have to be able to take time with each wife privately and as groups so that you can, you know, develop your relationship. The same way you would develop a one-on-one relationship, you have to develop this relationship as well. Each one of them has to be developed. That's why you can't be some, I want to sit around and just watch TV and scratch my butt all day kind of guy and do this. It's not going to work. And like I said, you have to respect it. If you got this wife, she likes to have her alone time, let her have her alone time. While she's having her alone time, this one over here, she likes attention, go give her her attention. And even in the intimacy part, the sex part, matter of fact, let's talk about that for a second. Even in the sex part, all right, let me see what the question is real quick. I know family polygamy and his wives are constantly fighting, and I've heard of this happening to others. Sometimes the first wife treats the others bad. And see, a person who does that, one, that man does not know how to lead that family, and two, they made bad decisions on who became sister wives. But yeah, they're a bad example in with the Amish. Yeah, there's plenty of bad examples. We can find bad examples in every situation. The divorce rate in America is like, what, 64%? And that's on one husband and one woman. The divorce rate is 64%. Spousal abuse is not low. It's very prevalent. So the same problem, you're going to face the same problem. Now, intimacy. is one of the things that a lot of people gravitate towards. I'm going to go ahead and put a little bit of my business out there. Y'all know I have no filters, and I have no problem with letting y'all inside my life. I've been married twice. Had a lot of relationships. Dating was horrible, but, you know, it's something you got to do in order to get married or find that right person. But in all my dating and in all my marrying at 47 years old, there has only been, intimacy-wise, four women who were either equal to or surpassing. One of them I shouldn't really count because we were very, very young, still in grade school. So that could have just been hormonal. But in my adult life, it's three. And when you think about it, and when all the people that I've coached and counseled and talked to, there are far more, the situation is far more so that the man has a much higher desire and need for sexual intimacy than the woman. It's just reality. There are women who have a higher libido than a man. But for the most part, it is the man with a higher libido than the woman. Now, I submit to you that other than, let's look at what's the biggest thing that creates divorce. Biggest reason for divorce, financial and sexual. Now, we know that polygamy, if done right, can handle your financial issue if you do it right. Intimacy-wise, this is where people get their emotions all caught up. But if a woman actually thought about it, based on the thousands of women that I have talked to, coached, counseled, spoken with, researched, read about, the average woman is good when making love once or twice. The actual physical aspect of having sex once or twice a week, the average woman is good. Now, does she want intimacy in other ways throughout the week? The conversation, the walks, the hugs, the watching movies together, cooking together. Does she want other forms of intimacy more so? Of course. But as far as actually having sex, one or two times a week, the average woman. The average guy, the average man, if they are honest, and in some of these instances, I know the dudes weren't honest because their woman was sitting like right there. So I know they were lying through their teeth, talking about, oh, I'm good about three times a week. You know, two or three times a week and I'm good. I know they were lying. They were lying through their teeth. And then I found out later they were lying because we had private conversations. And I'm like, dude, why you lie? And you know, I didn't want to start a whole other argument. You know, I know how she feels. If I say that, it's like a double-edged sword. Now she feels, you know, some kind of way about it, and that she feels like she has to do it, like it's a chore, and, you know, all these emotional issues that come out that he just don't want to deal with the emotions, so he said what he thought sounded good. But on average, men will tell me 5 to 7, 9, 10, and 11, right? Right. Statistics show that men doing the dishes is the most erotic thing to a woman. I'm going to look that one up. That's interesting. But most guys, 5, 6, 7, sometimes 11 times a week, they want to make love. They want to have sex. Men have a sex cycle, I like to say. They have a sex cycle. Some men have a sex cycle. You know, they have it today, they good for 2 days. You know, other men, they have it today, they want some more tomorrow. Some men, they have it today, 15 hours later, they want to have sex again. You know, we have sex. Each man has his own cycle. And I always tell women, you should learn your man's sex cycle. You know, and men have sex cycles that goes in stages. He has they just had sex. It's a certain amount of time goes by before he's horny. Then after he's horny, a certain amount of time goes by before he starts having anxiety and feeling a little light up tight. And then a certain amount of time goes by before he starts getting angry and frustrated and start looking at you, you know, out the side of his eye. Right? You need to learn a man's sex cycle and figure out at what point you want to cut the progression. You never want him to get to that point where he's freaking angry and irritated and frustrated, because even after you have sex, his mind is thinking she's going to go all the way up to that level again. Right? Consciously, subconsciously, he's thinking that. And now he's just still frustrated all the time. Right? So most men want to have sex way more often than most women. I remember being in a counseling session, and the male who was handling the counseling session was like, yeah, listen to the person I was with, right? It's called Blue Ball Scale. that's a good title. I don't know if it is or isn't, but I'm going to start using that. The Blue Ball Scale of a Man. But I was in a counseling session, and I've told this before, but I was in a counseling session, and the gentleman who was leading the counseling session, he, when it was said that, you know, when she said that she's good having sex once a week, but, you know, on average, she thinks we have sex about 4 or 5 times a month, and which is like once or twice a week, you know, sometimes twice in a week. He was saying that, well, you know, that's good. That's a good average. You know, so I broke down his number to him. I said, look, here's the deal. I want y'all to listen to this one. Let me come closer. If you have sex once a week, so next time somebody tells you once a week is good, I want you to say this. If you have sex once a week, there are 52 weeks in a year. It means you have sex 52 times a year. So out of 365 days, you had sex 52. In what world does that ratio come out to the better, to the better? In what reality is a ratio of 52 times out of 365, is that a good ratio? Maybe in baseball, that's a good average. I don't even think that's a good average in baseball. I've never done that computation, but I don't even think that's a good average in baseball. I think you will make it into the majors or even the minors if you hit the ball, got on base 52 times out of 365 times of that bat. That does no. Hell to no. Hell to the no. That doesn't make sense. So when I said that to him, I said 52 out of 365. You telling me we're supposed to be recommitting our love and our affection, our commitment towards each other 52 times out of 365. Even if it was twice a week, that's 104 times out of 365. You're not even halfway. You're not even 50% having it twice a week. So even 3 times a week, you're not even halfway. You're not even at 50%. If I were to only feed you, clothe you, shelter you, protect you 104 days out of 365, as a woman, if there's any women on here, if I were to feed you, clothe you, protect you out of and give you shelter only 104, I mean, I ain't going to give you 52, 104 days out of 365, would you stay with me? Would you stay with me? If I only showed you love and affection and respect, if I only respected you 52 days out of 365, would you still be with me? Or would you drop me like a bag? I'm not even going to wait for your comment. I know you would drop me like a bag. I know you would drop any man. You should drop any man that would only show you affection, love, care, consideration, respect 52 times out of 365. You understand what I'm saying? Do you understand what I'm saying? So when somebody says that, now I want you to think about it. In a polygamous relationship, if a woman really only really want to have sex with her man, once or twice a month, I mean a week, you got sister wife number two, right? I know, I said sex is not the only form of affection. I said that there are other forms of affection that you have to give to your woman every day. You should greet your woman every day with a hug and a kiss. You should hug your woman every day. You should try to dance with your woman as often as you can. You should do little things for them. You should say nice words to them, cater to them, flatter them every day. There's tons of other affection. But the recommitment, the bonding in the relationship, the hardcore sharing of energy in a relationship comes through sexual intimacy, right? She's not much of a feel for man on takes her out 2 or 3 times a month. That's right. So it comes through that. And when you're looking at a man who has a libido that is 5, 6, 7 times a week, and you have a woman whose libido is once or twice a week, sister wives are there for that. If you got 3 women who they're good once or twice a week, nobody should be pissed off
about who's sleeping with whom. My brother, she can be a fat woman and he hates her, but she has money. I don't even know what you're talking about, David. But that's the thing. It's about getting everybody in a situation should be able to get what they need. And if you come into it with a mature mind, that's why I said not every woman can do this either. Because a woman who's going to be jealous if she goes into, if he makes love to this wife 3 times a week, but only makes love to her 1 week, but her need is, her desire is only 1 week, why should she get jealous? Don't get jealous. This is where the man has to know, like I said, if this wife likes to cuddle, but that one don't, you know, as much, cuddle with her, but when this one wants to cuddle, you got to be over there to cuddle with that one, right? You have to be able to manage it. This is why I say an alpha male can be the only kind that needs, because you got to manage the different personalities. You got to manage your time with them. All the sister wives at the school are allocated love making 3 to 5 times a week. That's right. You got to allocate it. That's about managing you have to manage the situation, manage the relationship. So if a black family were to involve themselves in polygamy, it is very vital for the man to be able to manage the emotions, manage the affection, manage the finances, manage every aspect of the relationship so that no one walks away dissatisfied. No one is in the relationship feeling like they're being left out or being taken advantage of and that sort of thing. And then the sister wives have to come into a level of cooperation with one another. They have to learn how to cooperate. This is where having specific roles and duties that are vital in the entire situation is vital. Everybody has to know what their role is and then do it. And everybody needs their praise for accomplishing it, right? Let's see. Don't forget to open your comment section so we can post. It was an Old Testament for the reason. It was Adam and Eve, but after that, the fall, a whole lot of things changed. Actually, polygamy didn't. Okay, first of all, this is not biblically based, but after the fall, polygamy didn't go away. That's why I said in the very first part of it, there is absolutely nothing in the Bible that says that every man should only have one wife. Solomon didn't. And yeah, you can go into that. But it wasn't that he had the wives, it's that he started worshiping all the gods of the other wives. Abraham didn't. Israel, otherwise known as Jacob, didn't. They had multiple wives. Many of them had multiple wives. David, man after God's own heart, multiple wives. So what you're talking about is a doctrine. It is not biblically based. But this conversation is biblically based because I don't care about religion when it comes to this. This is about society, right? Let's see. Tia said, is that situation is having sex for procreation or pleasure? Well, here's the thing about sex, and as far as human beings are concerned, it's for both pleasure and procreation. Now, we do want to build a family, of course, and we want to keep the legacy, the family, the genome going, but it's also for pleasure. Humans are one of the few animals on the planet that have sex for pleasure, and it should be for pleasure, and that man should understand the difference. It's just like dudes who I know who date. You date this girl, you do this, and that made her feel great. You go do the same thing over here, that one, it don't make her feel great, but then your ego get all crushed. You got to recognize this woman, that woman. You got to be different for each one of them. So, yeah, the sex part is for pleasure, just as much as it is for procreation. But for me, it's kind of like what Prince said, sex is metaphysical. So it should be a thing of sharing and connecting energetically and spiritually more so than anything else. And there is divine pleasure in that in itself. And see, you said given the dysfunction in our community, I don't think we're ready to consider polygamy. You have to understand, we're ready to consider polygamy because of the dysfunction within our community. It will take 2 generations for it to become normal in our community and for people to start saying, dang, every polygamous family I see earns great money, have nice houses, kids are growing up doing great things, are creating power blocks in society. It takes that. In the same way as we started seeing that the way out for or out of the projects was military and sports and education. We saw that, and many people, black people, gravitated towards it. Now what do we see? We see black people, as well as other people, are suffering with big education, big bills, big student loan bills, and they're suffering with getting out of the military and not being able to get work. Used to, you came out as a veteran, getting a job was a problem. But after the 70s, that all changed. So we have to change with the paradigm. And I'm telling you, it only takes two generations of that. Two generations and the paradigm changes. The mindset changes. The way we function changes. But it has to be done properly. And when people see something work for other people, we have a tendency to gravitate to it. I can tell you this right now. I know a lot of people who have went to the gay community because they see that right now, they have gay people working for you in certain industries. It's fashionable and they make more money. And I've known people who, I know people who act gay. They're not gay, but they act gay to get better jobs in certain industries, like hair and fashion. That is true, and you're right. Many can't do it for a long, short time, maybe. Yeah. Check out Nature Boy on YouTube. Don't know. Okay. I would offer that I have to be a shift in our collective consciousness first. I'm off. How much work would have to be done for me? And here's the thing about it. It is never a shift of the majority that creates a change. Think about the American Revolution. The American Revolution did not happen because the majority of Americans decided that they wanted to revolt, that they were tired of being English subjects. Yeah, they were pissed off about some of their taxation, but they didn't want to revolt. They wanted to stay British subjects, right? But a few started, and then the rest joined in. All it ever takes to change is a few. You get a few doing something, and others start to gravitate. Any kind of movement starts out with the one leader who stands out like a crazy person, like a lone nut. But then it's that next 3-4 people who join in. They're the ones who really start making it and building it and getting other people to join. That next 3-4 people join in, they join the company, and they start working and building the company. Then more people start gravitating towards that and gravitating towards something. And then all of a sudden, the masses, once the masses see that it's safe, that it's okay, that society is not shunning them, then the masses come. So it only takes a few to get started. It doesn't take a lot. We don't have to have a mass collective change. All you need is a good 10, 20,000 black people in America start doing it and start developing economic power and economic growth. And I guarantee you, you'll start seeing 100,000, then 200,000, 3, 4, 5. Next thing you know, you'll have whole neighborhoods and you'll have whole cities of people living that lifestyle. And it will gravitate and it'll become, that's why I say at least two generations, 40 years, at least 40 years. I was talking about the society not being rude. It's not religion. Yeah, okay, right. So it's not religion. But I can't agree with you there. I can agree with you there. Perhaps it's critical. That's the way that we're going. Now, there are great men that would want for nothing. These other men would be forced to step up. They would have to work for the women and provide for them. Otherwise, they would like it. Exactly. Be sister. Yeah, and that's, I'm basically, be sister, and I'm no lesbian. That's enough. You don't have to be lesbian. Some do, some aren't. Nothing against the ones who do, but you don't have to. You don't have to. You just have to have a mindset of recognizing what your desires are. I think the woman has to have enough, just like the man has to have that inner knowledge, the woman has to have that inner knowledge herself. She has to know herself. She has to know that, you know what, sexually, I only want him once or twice a week. Intimately, I only want him around me I only want him to hug, dance with me, walk with me, maybe this much. Is how much of that type of attention I want. How much do I want to interact myself with other things? You know, you have to know yourself, and to be able to know yourself, say, am I getting what I need? And if you say, I'm getting what I need,
and long as my sister is getting what she needs, and that one is getting what they need, and everybody's getting what they need, then why do I need to be jealous? Why do I need to cause this intense argument? Like, if everybody's getting what they need, that's why I said it takes a level of inner knowledge, inner knowing, and maturity. Otherwise, no, you're setting yourself up for a very destructive situation, which is in the same way when people who don't know themselves get married to just one person. They set themselves up for a destructive situation. I can't tell you how many destructive situations a one-on-one relationship people have set themselves up in because they didn't know each other, nor did they know themselves well enough to function in that relationship. I can tell you this, over the last 3 years of dating, I know who I am. I know myself. Many people try to tell me who I am or tell me I don't know myself, but I don't care what they say. But I know myself and I know who I am. I know what I need in a relationship and I know what I don't need in a relationship. Oftentimes, have I given too much time for a person to try to see if they want, if they say they want to, you know, cultivate themselves in a certain way, and I've given some of them time. But then as I've gotten in the last year, or about the last year, I'm going to say the last year, last 7, 8 months, I don't have that patience. If a person doesn't know themselves, I can't deal with them. You've got them to really know who you are, know what you want. And then as you're in a relationship, see it, check it, evaluate. And once you come to a conclusion, recognize that that person is not for you, move on. Move on. Or if they're for you or they have issues but y'all are working on it, then that's great. Work on it. But as long as the work is being done, there's progression. They keep working. If there's no progression, they'll walk away from it. So even whether it's one-on-one or if it's a polygamous relationship, you have to recognize that with anybody you're looking at, you're interviewing, you're talking to, you're trying to decide. I mean, there are polygamous groups where people go on, say they're on Facebook and stuff like that. A friend of mine put me in a polygamous group, and I watched it for like 6 months because I found it like fascinating, you know, the dynamics of how people were interacting with one another. But people were taking time to get to know each other, talk to each other. Some were in the long distance type situation, so they were going back and forth, visiting one another. You know, you have to be able to take that time to really dive deep into yourself and to them. So if you don't have inner knowledge and you can't take your inner knowledge yourself and then make sure you're not allowing stupid emotions to control you, then you can do it. But if you are not, if you've grown up in a society and society's way of thinking is more important or more ingrained in you, then it's not something you should participate in. You should just walk away from it. What do you think if there should be, like, if there should be contracts, not just financial, stating that what a woman wants and what a man wants, and that each will be abide by that. I think that helps, you know, even in monogamous relationships. It's funny you say that because that is one of the things that when I'm coaching people, depending upon how long I'm coaching them and what we're headed towards, is one of the things I do. I like, and I've done it in most of my relationships where it's like, okay, I need you to write up all the things that you desire in a man. And I want you to write up all the things about yourself. How do you see yourself, you know, in the long term, and how you're going to get there, what are you willing to do to get there. I need to know these things so that I can understand, like, whether or not this is a good fit and if it's something that we can grow together in. Because we may start out now compatible, but the direction that you want to go, your life to go, may not be compatible to the direction I want my life to go. And when things are written out, you take the time to write them out. Like, I have a PowerPoint. I have a PowerPoint presentation on my laptop that is titled The Happiness of Lorenzo, right? And it details out what makes me happy and where my life is going and how I, you know, see that. And I measure what I find out about a woman based on that, as whether or not we're compatible. You know, so writing out a contract, figuring out, having these things written down. One of the couples that I recently was coaching, I'm going to go ahead and brag. Get a little big head now. It's a little ego talk, okay? But one of the things that I was told is they told me that if they hadn't been working with me, that their relationship would be over. Their relationship would be over. And here's the thing. There was some of the exercises that we did, they were written exercises so that they can see it and they can read it and they can go over it and be able to see things in themselves and in their mate that they never really realized. Or
it was things that they didn't know how important certain things were to them. So once they realized how important this was to him, that was to her, then the emphasis and the understanding of why things became very came to light. And whether it's a monogamous relationship or polygamous relationship, those are things that you should be doing. You should be putting all these things down on paper, really understanding yourself, seeing yourself truly who you are, and then seeing the other person. Like, there was another exercise I wanted to do with that couple, but we didn't get to a position where I thought that they were equipped for that exercise. Amazing exercise. But it can, if you don't do it right, if you don't have maturity behind you, it's going to cause arguments. So we didn't get that far yet. Not yet. We'll get there, but just not yet. To live with support would be great. And yes, I'm going to say like the Mormons. I'm going to say like the Mormons, but they got it from us originally. All right. Now, and the support is great. I mean, when I was in Dubai in the United Arab Emirates and Jebel Ali and Bahrain, I don't know if my brother was on here, but he might have saw it too when he was in Bahrain and Dubai. But I'm telling you, because they were a more open society as far as not dogging women out and treating them like crap. You know, women could, like in Saudi Arabia when I was there, and couldn't drive cars, right? A woman couldn't drive a car. Like, that's how they had that. But when in UAE, they could drive cars. They had all those same rights as men. So totally different society. But I saw the women all together, fun, working together, doing things together, preparing meals together, because we did whole banquet things and invited to different people's homes and all that stuff. But I saw them out on the street. Women, they didn't treat, this is not my birth child, this is my sister's wife's child. They treated that child just as well as, you know, their own. So I saw a totally different dynamic in UAE with polygamy than I saw in Saudi Arabia. And of course, one is more strict religiously than the other one is, and one is heavy patriarchal, and the other one is just patriarchal, but not like dogmatic. So the support structure was amazing. In the Gambia, the support structure was amazing. Morocco, the support structure was pretty good. It's pretty good. But I saw like tons of support structure in the entire environment, and even the men supported the men supported each other from other, like they had that brotherly love going on with each other from the community and neighborhood. So, I mean, and all the kids, it was a great thing. I mean, it was a beautiful thing. Do you think a wife can date other men? What do you think of polyandry? Well, see, polyandry to me is just dating. It's just marriage with benefits. It's just dating. It's an open dating. That's only when you're lacking something intimately, emotionally, sexually. And if that's your bag, that's fine. You know, but as far as building a community, it does nothing to build a community, right? So let's say if I was married right now, but then I'm openly dating some woman and she's in the projects and that sort of thing, or she's low income. And of course, if I'm dating her and she's struggling, I'm not going to let her struggle, you know, completely. But now that's outside of another house. That's more money. That's taking money out of this house, putting it in that house. You understand what I'm saying? So it's like you're defeating the purpose of building. And then here she got a kid, but I only come over there. I have fun with them. We hang out. We do a few things. But, you know, the kid is not getting that father figure. He's getting just a man who comes in and out. It's not a man who comes home every day, a man that he can talk to every day, a man that he can bounce things off of, a man that goes out in the yard, teach him how to chop some wood, teach him how to cut grass, how to, you know, build some stuff and take care of some stuff. Not a man that takes him to the car wash. You know, they wash the car together. It's not, you're missing that dynamic. So when people are talking about polyandry, I'm just like, okay, you're just doing that for sex, man. You really ain't doing it to build nothing. Because the three of y'all ain't coming together and saying, hey, let's build a business together. You're not doing that. You're not coming together and say, okay, you know, me and my wife, we work. We got money. We stable, but we're gonna invest in this business, this store, and you're gonna run the store. Polyandry doesn't do that. So if all you want is just sex and intimacy, then yeah, go for it. But if you want to build, then I don't agree with it. Do you think this could work with one woman having more than one man?
It could, but like the Tibetan village that I spoke of at the beginning of this video, they did it because their land doesn't produce enough and they want to keep population control down. So generations have went by and the men are kind of used to it. But when I was watching the little documentary, I don't even remember what documentary I was watching when I saw that. I wish I did, because I would tell you guys to go check it out. All those men were Charlie Delta level men. None of them were like alpha men. None of them were to kind of go out and say, you know what, we got to build something, do something to create a better situation for our family. It was just like, they were just like, yeah, we can get it work. But you know, they were just, So, yeah. Now in America, it would be different. You know, you got a lot of guys, like I said earlier, they're accountants, they're like pediatricians, you know, they have well, good paying jobs. You know, they're a welder. You know, I was telling this young lady today that, you know, this guy that she was thinking about dating, now, he's a welder. I told her, I said, do you know that welders make more money than most professional jobs? Almost, we was near downtown Atlanta. I was like, most of the people working in these office buildings don't make as much as a welder. You know, so if you're paying, if parents are only, you know, crapping out on because of the job title. But, you know, these guys, they make good money. But they may not necessarily be an alpha male. So if you got an alpha male, alpha female, and she got her a Charlie Delta male, it could work. But that dude's going to get dogged out. Those dudes are going to get dogged out horribly. And here's the thing about beta Charlie males. When they get dogged out, when they feel like, when they get dogged out, when they're not feeling like a man, they act out like children. They just throw tantrums all the time, create arguments, try to be physical with the woman, like, or they go cheat on the woman. They have to find a way to assert their maleness in some form or fashion that is usually destructive, either toward that woman in particular, or go out and have an affair. So because most men can't deal with their egos like that, I'm going to say that it's possible, but it's going to be few and far between. Few and far between who can handle it. Most men aren't going to be able to handle that at all. Right? Not at all. And it's a double standard. But it's kind of like I tell my children. There are things that my son can do, was able to do at an early age, and I let my daughters do it. So, it's a double standard. I don't care. There are, but at the same time, there were things that my daughters can get away with that my son can't. And I tell, you know what I tell him? Get over it, buddy. Those are my girls. If my girls want to live with me until they're 30, 40 years old, my girls can live with me until they're 30, 40 years old. But that dude, she ain't living with me until he's 30, 40 years old. Maybe 30. Because he might need 10 years to actually learn manhood. Because I think we throw our kids out into the world way too early. You know, we expect them to be an adult at 18, 19 years old. 18, 19 years old, I didn't even know how to get an apartment. When they started talking about deposits, I was like, what the hell? What do you mean no deposit? And I would call my mom. Mom, you tell me nothing about deposits. She was like, well, you know you got that. I was like, no, I didn't. So 18, 19, we're not ready for adulthood. But by 25, 26, that boy got to, you know, you got to start standing on your own feet. Boy. My daughter's though, you say to that all you want. My son asked me for some money. Why? Why? What you mean? Why you can't get it on your own? My daughter asked for some money. There you go. You need some extra. Yeah. I am double standard all the way, and damn proud of it. So, I don't think it'll work with a woman and two men or two or three men. Not in this world. Only in that remote situation. Only in a situation where it was about population control. And even that, you're still gonna have a difficult time. Still gonna have a very difficult time. Most men today can't handle one woman, and you're talking about three or four. Yeah, most of them can't, which is why I said that this is not for most men. This is only for a man who is an alpha male.
But I will submit to you this. This is why I say two generations. After 40 years, I think that beta males will be able to handle it after 40 years of seeing alpha males and seeing how their lives and their children have progressed. Those alpha men will typically raise additional alpha men within their household with their extra wives. So you'll start to have more alpha men out there on the playing field than you have Charlie and Delta men. You're always going to have some Charlie and Delta. But then, like I said, the betas will grow up into it and they'll get better. It will take a few generations. It will take two generations, 40 years at least, for a shift to occur. So, and of course, the women, not every woman can do it either because it takes a certain kind of woman to do it. I've seen polygamy work. I've seen monogamy work. I've seen each not work. Yep. However, with the way the black community is, I don't think it would work. A lot of people need help first.
That's why I was saying that sometimes, you know, the best medicine is not always the one that we think is the best one. It is the one that works. That when my kid's mom was pregnant, my wife at the time was pregnant, you think you're ready. Now, like, if I don't know if my brother's still on it, but my brother was getting on my nerves when we first got married. Man, you need to hurry up and have your kids. Go on and have your kids. Hurry up and have your kids. Man, y'all need to go ahead and start having kids so that they all grown by the time y'all get young for it. Have your kids. He was getting on my last nerves saying that when I first got married. I was 19 when I first got married. And that joker kept saying that. Getting on my nerves. So we waited. We said, no, we're not ready. We got to get prepared. We got to get our adulting moment. And then even when she got pregnant, it was like, okay, we're pregnant. And we talked about how the kids going to be raised, you know, our disagreements on that, until we finally came to agreement on some of the major things as to how we were going to raise the kids. So, and I think I was like 25 when the first child was born. And through all our conversations, through all our preparation, through all our getting ready, through all our healing from our, you know, the way that we grew up and some of the struggles that we had, we still weren't ready. We weren't ready until we had a child. Until that little girl came home, we weren't ready. And even when she came home, we weren't ready. 6 months later, we still weren't ready. You're never going to be, okay, now is a good time for polygamy. It's one of those things that you just do. It's like starting a business. People tell me all the time that they want to start a business. I'm getting ready. I'm getting ready. And I just say, okay. Because in my mind, I know you're never going to be ready. It's something you just have to. You get as much information as you can. But after a point, you got to jump in. You got to get in the water. You can't dip a toe into business. Matter of fact, I see that there's a person on here, Donna. Donna owns a daycare center. She knows. You just gotta go. Doing business is about just going. And yeah, you learn a lot and you take some pitfalls and some shit happens. Yeah, so if Black Americans start doing polygamy, yeah, there's gonna be some bad stories. There's gonna be some people who get hurt. But how much more damage is that going to be with all the monogamous relationships that are abusive, that are people not speaking and dealing with each other that are loveless. How much more abusive is that than all these single mothers out here trying to raise boys and girls? And I hate that we always say single mothers trying to raise a boy by herself. But hey, guess what? A single mother who has a daughter, she needs a man too. That little girl needs a father, needs a male figure in the household just as much as that little boy. And just as much as those boys and girls need a father, they need a mother. One of the things that it would do is it could curtail some of the disease in the Black community with STDs, but it will also curtail the children growing up without parents, without male and female role models in the household. That's why this separate household grab is stupid. That's not polygamy. It's sugar daddy. That's all you need. It's sugar daddy. Sylvia, thanks for answering the question. All right, have a good night. Beautiful Bean. Enjoy the State of the Union. I would not be watching the State of the Union. What a State of the Union. That shit crazy. That's the State of this Union. So that's why I say, like, you know, You know what that Joker said? That Joker said that I'm going to say, and I know I'm going to probably catch hell for this. He said black people should vote for him because the previous regimes ain't been working for us, so what else do we have to lose? Our current style of relationship haven't been working for the black community. What else do we have to lose? Might as well try. We got nothing else to lose. Can't hurt him. He just finished his speech. Good. I don't want to hear it anyway. I'm pretty sure I kept the cliff notes. In 46 years, we will have no gender. We will all be one, male and female, in one body. They're working on this as we speak. I'm not going to be a hermaphrodite, but I'm with you. Going to reproduce asexually. You know, Star Trek. Here's the thing about that. Star Trek. I love Star Trek because it always throws stuff at you like that. But Star Trek New Generation did an episode where they encountered a species that was androgynous, right? You couldn't tell if they were male or female. And they all moved and acted and participated in life in an androgynous, asexual kind of manner. Well, you know, William Riker, now it's easy. One such scientist that he was working close with, even though she was androgynous, that female energy started coming out, and she realized that she was female. Everything in the universe follows the hermetics, but I used to like it. In order to birth anything, it takes male and female. It takes male and female energy. It takes male and female biologically to birth anything on this planet. Are there things that house both male and female inside them? Reproductive organs or situation? Yeah. But that's the minor. The majority does not. Scientifically, we may be able to alter things, but nature always has a way of bringing things back into balance. Just like I forgot what species of frog it is, but if there are too many males, then some of them, they produce more females. If there's too many females, they produce more males. There's even one species where they will, in the midst of being a male, convert to a female. I don't know how in the hell that happens, but I've never seen it. I just read about it. So nature has a way of superseding, overriding, rewriting whatever man does. So it's just like if we destroyed this planet with nuclear missiles blasting everything around here. Yeah, everything on the planet may die for a long time. We'll die for a long time. But after a certain amount of time, nature has a way of healing itself. So it'll bring it back. It'll bring it back. We can all do some of it. Some fish can change sex. Yeah, I've heard that. Some fish can do it too. But so at the end of everything, I think that this is just my opinion. All right. We are, and let me put this in here. Let me put this in here the way I want to. In the next 2-3 years, I keep telling y'all, in 3 to 5 years, we are going to have an epic financial crisis. We've had some minor ones. Y'all seen minor crash, right? The dot-com bubble, the housing market crash. Those are decent-sized economic downturn. But I'm talking about that Wall Street when that burned down. What was it? The Great Depression time. We're headed for one of those, right? Now, I don't think it's going to be as bad as the Wall Street crash. I think that's one of the massive ones that there's enough safeguards to prevent that now. But I think we're headed for one of those crashes like the 1970s crashes. The one where you saw gas lines, you saw food lines. I think we're headed for one of those where people losing their houses, losing their joblessness is like at that 14, 15, 20, 30%. I think we're heading towards one of those. And it'll happen within the next 10 years, right? Because these kind of things will happen then. Every time in the last, from Reaganomics on, every time we go through a recession, you know what group statistically gets further and further behind the wealth gap? Black Americans. It ain't the Spanish, it ain't the Jewish, it ain't the Asians. It's Black Americans. Get further and further behind every time there is a recession. This last recession, when the housing bubble burst, you didn't see Black communities spring up all over the place. You saw Spanish communities spring up. You saw Asian communities spring up. You saw white people regentrifying areas like a big dog. You saw all that stuff spring up. You didn't see Black communities spring up. You didn't see
millionaires of everybody else bring up. These groups have benefits that we don't, and we can't have in this country. We're not going to have it. And it'll take us like two, it'll take way long to have. Of course, the white people, they have the benefit of this, the white privilege, right? The Asian people, the Spanish people, they have the benefit of having mother countries, right? In 10 years, you'll be able to get a baby off of Amazon. But these other, the Asian, the Spanish, they have a home base of Mexico and Nicaragua and Colombia and China, Japan and Vietnam. They have these home bases that they operate from, that they have, that they connect with, right? And because they have these home bases that they connect with, they have cultures that they keep recycling. Yeah, some of their children lose their culture, but they still connect to the culture. This is why they have their own grocery stores, their own food, they have their own shops and all that. They practice group economics, they live in the same household with each other. They have that. They have that culture of them. We don't. Black Americans don't have that. And in our current state, we're not going to get it. So the next recession, if it's a big one, like the 70s kind of big one, we will fall so far behind the power gap and the financial gap. But one way we can subvert that is by understanding how polygamy is an economic vehicle. Get the sexual part out of your mind. Recognize it first for the economic and family strength building aspect. And that vehicle, if done properly, where alpha males are managing the households with multiple women and the household is building financial stability and economics and raising kids who are learning and understanding that, and that male is also being connected to the emotions and the mental, physical, spiritual status of its women, of the women in the household, you are building structures that won't allow for the black family to disintegrate into the turmoil that it's headed into, because it's not getting better. It's not getting better. It's not. And none of the religion that most black people are practicing, none of the political groups that most black people are following are doing anything for this, are doing anything to benefit the black family in that way. Sure, they talk a good game. Love your wife. Husbands, love your wife as Christ loved the church. For I know not a man to hate his own flesh. Yeah, they say it all the time, but they don't follow it. You don't follow it. Wives, submit to your own husband. You know, they don't follow it. They don't follow it. You know, do not deny the wife body is not the wife, the husband body is not the husband. So don't deny each other except in times of agreed upon fasting and prayer. Yeah, but they don't follow it. If the body is not yours, then you should never deny your husband. If the body is not yours, you should never deny your wife. They don't follow it. Abraham built all that with him and his servants. They weren't exactly his wives, but they were concubines. Servants. Solomon, greatest king, wisest man, concubines. Fell into disrepair, but got it all back. It's chock full there. It's there. All the stories in the Bhagavad Gita, you know, they're doing the same thing. Multiple wives, multiple family groupings, you know, they're doing that. Ancient Africa, everywhere. But what are we doing? What are we doing? We're trying to follow a program that's not in our benefit, not in our best interest. So I say that if you are open to it, if you can do it, if you have maturity and the inner knowledge to do it, you should practice polygamy. You should practice it. If you are a single mother and you're struggling, you need to learn your inner knowledge and you should practice it. Right? Are you struggling? And then reading this. Gotta get the reading glasses on for the Facebook one. Indeed, the nuclear family is dead. It is dead. Max Papillon. Are you brother? Am I polygamous? I am not in a polygamous relationship, if that's what you're asking. Am I open to a polygamous relationship? I am. Is that easy to find in America? No. Am I out? diligently searching for polygamous relationships. Not quite. Am I out searching for it? It is a hard thing to find in America. Because American women aren't as open to it. But if it was the right people, would I participate in a polygamous relationship? I sure would. I think that it would be a huge benefit to whomever is involved. Yeah, I think it's great. Am I saying it's totally out of my future? I'm not saying it's totally out of my future. You never know. You never know. You never know how life moves. So if I ever am, I'll let you know. Because I don't hide it. You know, my life is going for the most part. I don't hide it. I try not to hide it. Because I mean, I don't know if you guys got any other questions. If not, we're going to be ready to close it out for the evening. Let me give you a little, three things. Okay. Number one, first I want to say this. You know, even though my boy Andre on here, this show is sponsored by not only Uncle Ren's Popcorn, but my newest brand that is under Uncle Ren's Popcorn. It is called Alchemy Popcorn. Go to alchemypopcorn.com. And you can get CBD infused popcorn. That's right. Anxiety, PTSD, epilepsy, having problems with those things, CBD popcorn is a great way. Each bag contains 50 milligrams of CBD, which is perfectly legal in every state in America. So shipping it to you is not a problem. So that's alchemypopcorn.com. That's number one. Number two is, I forgot. But number two was, I think it was only two, but I was just missing it. You don't like it and you don't trust thought of it. That's why it's not for everybody. The other one. Oh, there was three. Number two, I will be doing a live and an impromptu live between now and Sunday. More than likely, it'll be Sunday. Of my, I do realize that some people, they need help with their marketing. So I'm going to be doing a course program that I will call Crystal Clear Marketing. It might be before Sunday, but more than likely with everything that's going on this week, it'll be Sunday. I'm going to do it impromptu live. I have no idea what time it'll be. I'm just going to do it. But we're going to go over my marketing program, Crystal Clear Marketing. You got women in the church marrying Jesus? Yeah, you do. And the third thing, stop throwing me off. Third thing is what we're going to talk about next week. Next week, what we're going to do, we're going to go a little spiritual, religious wise. I had an interesting conversation with a Jewish man the other day, and we started talking about, he brought up how Kaufman's theory on how Judaism didn't evolve from the previous cultures of Sumeria, Babylon, Egypt, and that sort of thing. And we went through Kaufman's information, found some holes in it. But one of the things that would intrigue me, and that's not so much what we're going to talk about next week, we're going to talk a little bit about that. But what intrigued me the most is there are certain aspects of the Abrahamic religion that were incredibly appealing. And why were they appealing to the Romans, to the Greeks and the Romans? And what is it about that? What there's a certain appeal about it that allows for people to gravitate toward it even when they know that there are problems with it. Even when they know that there are things, contradictions, things don't make sense, they will still take the document will follow suit. And I want to talk about and discuss what there are a few aspects that Kaufman did bring up that shows why it became a popular message, what made it so popular and reasonable in the minds of men, and how those same aspects that made it that are very hermetic in nature, still hermetic in nature. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to break down why it's they call it the greatest story ever told, which is the story of Jesus, but even before that, the greatest story ever told was the creation and the idea of Yahweh, right? And we're going to talk about that. Okay, and we're going to break it down based on, if you've never heard of the J text and the P text and the D text and E text and the redacted, we're going to talk about those things because they played a very important role in understanding this message of how a small little group of people in this little area created a writing that people fell in love with and have been able to use for a few thousand years, 3,000 years, because the oldest writing is only 3,000 years old, and that's possibly 3,000 years old. And that's a small little fragment that is, not even a complete scroll or book. So anyhow, I hope you guys join me for that. What do you say, Maxine? Do you believe in Jesus, dude? No, I don't. I don't believe in Jesus in the format that most people do. Well, I don't believe in Jesus at all. I just study, but I don't believe in Jesus. I don't, my salvation, there is no, I don't need salvation. There is no salvation. You are your own Savior. But that's a whole nother, you know what? Save that kind of a conversation for next week. All right. But I do have a great deal of knowledge about the Abrahamic religion, as well as the Buddhist, the Hindu, the Sumerians, the Babylonians, and we're going to correct some things too. Just in going through that information, we have to correct. See, we say Babylonian, but they were originally Babel, right? B-A-B-E-L, because Babel doesn't mean Babel language, not language. It's Babel meaning gateway of the God, right? And then Bab is gateway, El, God. And this is why originally the Hebrews called God El, because they were taken from the Babylonians, their God El, who used to have a wife, who El became the supreme God. But there are some differences when the J-text was written, it changed certain dynamics in religion that made Abrahamic religion start to grow and become popular and became something more of the people and not just the aristocrats. So, but I don't want to get into it tonight. We're not going to get into that tonight. So join me next week. We're going to break some of that stuff down. That conversation I had was really great. I love when I'm talking to somebody and it's just a general conversation. Nobody's trying to like curse each other out, yell at each other like, no, these people don't have the ability to. And we're just talking. It was a great conversation. So I want to share that with you guys. One day when I'm having one of these conversations, I always ask people if I can record it, but they always like, well, I don't want to be on it. They get on my nerves today. Scared of the camera. that is fake. But so we're going to talk about that. So I hope you guys enjoyed this conversation about polygamy. I have thoroughly enjoyed it. You know, doing extra research on it was pretty cool because I found out a few things that I didn't know that we discussed tonight. And then it made me think about what kind of people would this actually work for. Like, how do you start? And it's just like any and every movement. You start out with a couple of people who are alpha, who are mature emotionally and mentally, who can handle these kind of things. And what they demonstrate to the world, others start to join in, right? The other alphas, the other betas, they start joining in. And after a while, you start getting everybody joining in. And when everybody's joining in, by the time we get to great-grandkids, those great-grandkids, to them, it's just common to build and to create and to establish relationships that build family and build business, own the land and the property that you live on. You know, it becomes second. By the time we get to grandkids, that's just what they do. Because they've seen their parents do it and they've seen their grandparents do it. That's just what they do. So we started now to get to that point, okay, by normalizing it in our current day, by beginning the process of making it normal, all right? So y'all have a great night. And as always, remember, you have to free yourself to be yourself because your greatness is not negotiable.